How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show. Breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix and Rohan Lockhart.
This is the Crossover NBA podcast. I'm Chris Mannix, joined by my colleague, Rohan Nadkarni. And Rohan, this is unfortunately going to be a James Harden-centric podcast because the three teams we're going to talk about today, Houston, Philadelphia, the LA Clippers, all have a connection to one James Harden. And the only team that's struggling right now is the team that James Harden is on. But before I get to what we're going to talk about on this week's show, do you remember that takedown from a couple of days ago that the Dallas Mavericks broadcaster did on James Harden? A really well-articulated takedown.
Also felt a little personal.
I didn't feel that way. I didn't think it was personal. I thought it was pretty professional. I mean, it wasn't bombastic. It was
all facts. Don't get me wrong. All facts. Yeah. Just funny for to come from a Mavericks broadcaster, but continue.
Definitely. You know, an unusual source on something like that. But it was factual, and it went viral, and you know, it was widely applauded for the substance of what it said. Our friend Jimmy Traina, our colleague over at SI.com, says that Bally Sports Southwest has taken down that video. They've taken down the video because, according to Jimmy Traina, it did not meet with the values of the Mavericks. What? What are we talking about? That was the furthest thing from controversial. It was certainly, you know, spicy.
It was opinionated, perhaps.
It was a take. But isn't that what you want from broadcasters? Like, don't you want them to have a take? I mean, how vanilla do you want a broadcaster to be? I mean, it was out of left field coming from a Dallas Mavericks broadcaster. You expect something like that from, like, Stephen A. Smith on First Take, or Skip Bayless on Undisputed. You don't expect that from an analyst on the Dallas Mavericks broadcast. But that's where it came from, and that's how it got into the universe. It got taken down. Wild. Wild
that's
to me that it got
so
taken down.
I had no clue. That's kind of an embarrassing look. Someone had to have complained. Perhaps it was the Clippers. Who knows? That is, or maybe just Mark Cuban doesn't want that guy, you know, acting like he's representing the Mavericks. I don't know. But can we just be adults about this? We all know that that's one person's opinion. No one is ascribing this take to the Dallas Mavericks. It was, again, as we sat here, it was all true. Nothing he said was a lie. Nothing was exaggerated. That's a bit ridiculous to have it taken down.
Absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. But apparently it no longer exists on the Bally Sports Southwest platform because somebody didn't like this broadcaster being mean to James Harden. All right, well, let's start with the positive.
Can I just say real quick how it feels like one week you're like, I'm so excited to not talk about James Harden today. But you can't quit him. And I respect it. He's at the center of somehow a lot of NBA stories this year.
How do you not talk about
him? It's true. It's
like
true.
The tentacles of James Harden are
far-reaching
across the league right now.
Yeah, yes, I mean, absolutely.
You could even, and we're not going to get to them this week, but you could even include like the Miami Heat, a team that people wondered,
didn't trade for James Harden.
Yeah, would they be interested in James Harden? They've won five games in a row and it started to look like, you know, a contender again. But let's talk about Houston off the bat, because I think Houston is the biggest story in the NBA right now. 6-3 after defeating Denver at home on Sunday. They've won six straight games after losing their first three to start the season. I'm going to throw some numbers at you, Rohan. Last season, Houston was 29th in defensive efficiency. This year, they are fifth. Last season, they were 27th in offensive efficiency. This year, they are ninth. There are four teams in the NBA in the top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency. The Houston Rockets are one of them. They've got five guys averaging double figures. The next three out there on the roster are Jayshon Tate, Amen Thompson, and Tari Eason, who are a big part of what this team likes to do defensively. And this is a team that is growing in confidence, it looks like, every single game. Here's Fred VanVleet on that surge in confidence.
Yeah, I mean, you could see, you could feel and you could see when a team is finding its way and finding confidence in the things that we're doing. And once you get that buy-in and that trust and trusting each other defensively, offensively, that allows you to withstand runs and to go on your own runs.
So, Rohan, what do you make of the Rockets? You know, how they've been playing, and is this start, is any of it sustainable?
I think they've been fantastic. I definitely think it's sustainable. I liked their offseason strategy of let's go out and get capable veterans. You know, Fred VanVleet, it's not like they gave him a super long contract. I thought that was a good deal for them. You're going to have to pay max money to get a guy like that to come to Houston. He's been great. Dylan Brooks, I mean, comeback player of the year. I mean, I don't know what kind of award you give Dylan Brooks, but it feels like he's deserving of something for what he's done so far this season. I think he's been one of the better stories in the league, in some ways kind of having the latest laugh, at least in terms of where the Grizzlies are right now, where he was painted as the number one problem. They've been great. I got texts from a couple people last night who were like, Ime Udoka's easily the coach of the year right now. I mean, obviously, listen, it's very early. We're not even a month into the season here, but I think he's done a fantastic job. And Chris, I mean, you've been one of the people to point this out. Like, he coaches guys hard, and even if there are bumps along the way, I think that he gets results. And players, at least around the league, have a ton of respect for him. I just think they have a really good mix right now between vets to kind of show these young guys the way, and then young players who are playing fantastic. And we didn't even mention Alperen Şengün. You know, it's funny, Pina and I used to talk about him a lot on this podcast back in the day. And I was like, let's not compare him to Jokic just yet because he had a couple good summer league games. But then you saw him play against Joker last night, and he's definitely Joker-ish. I mean, I think he's been really, really good for them so far. He's having a breakout year. They just have a lot of talent on this team after years of being in the lottery. And I feel like they finally have a coach who can put it all together.
Yeah, shout out to Dylan Brooks, who has a higher true shooting percentage this year than Steph Curry. Remarkable. He's shooting career highs above 50% from the field, above 50% from three-point range, and he has been a leader on that defense. This is a combination of things in Houston. You have to give Raphael Stone the general manager credit, because after kind of piecing this team together in an odd way the last couple of years, just bringing in talent wherever he could find talent, you know, whether that was Christian Wood, who nobody really wanted, you know, when Houston brought him in, whether that was Kevin Porter Jr., who nobody wanted when Houston brought him in, he kind of prioritized talent over fit. This past offseason, they looked more for guys that could fit. They looked for veterans who could be leaders in that locker room. Fred VanVleet has a championship. Jeff Green has a championship. Mm-hmm. Dylan Brooks doesn't have a championship, but look, you know, for all that went wrong at the end in Memphis, Dylan Brooks was still
huge,
a very good
part
player
of their success.
Last year.
Huge part of their
look,
success.
His, you know, Memphis scapegoated him for how it ended last season, and but before that, you know, he was a big reason why they were, what, the number two seed mm-hmm. in the Western Conference. And if you look at Memphis right now, granted, there's a lot going wrong out there, I think they could use a Dylan Brooks. I think Dylan Brooks would be a valuable piece to that team right now. So credit Raphael Stone for making the deals that he did to bring in the guys that make sense, because this team always had some really good young talent. They had Jalen Green, who's a top of the line scorer. They had, you know, Jabari Smith, who's a good two way player. Şengün, I get the Jokic kind of comparison. That might be a bit of a stretch there. He's got some Jokic Jokic-ness to his game, but he's a terrific offensive player. And you're seeing that play out this year. I mean, they go 8-9 guys deep with legitimate NBA players that can be trusted in certain roles. So I think they've got the right mix of players. And Ime Udoka is the right coach. I mean, I have been, you know, I was a staunch Stephen Silas supporter. I don't believe he got a fair shake last year.
He got a terrible hand dealt to him.
He was dealt a terrible hand. All that being said, hiring Ime Udoka was the right decision, because mm-hmm. you needed a disciplinarian. You needed a defensive-minded guy. You needed a player, a coach who was an ex-player, who I think players in that locker room would have a little bit more respect for. While Ime Udoka has not gone scorched earth on this team like he did in Boston in the early parts of his first season there, his tough love has kind of taken an effect with this team. They're a much tougher team right now. I mean, Şengün, I'm shocked by Şengün. When I talk to people about Ime Udoka fitting in Houston, The one guy they said might have a problem with him would be Sengun, because Ime was a really tough coach, and I don't think a lot of people were convinced that Sengun was a very tough player. But Sengun seems...
And Udoka's a defense-first guy, not Sengun's strength. Yeah,
but that's worked. It's worked out there in Houston for them. I mean, look, Denver was down Jamal Murray, whatever. They're still a really good team that had one loss on the season. That was an impressive win, even to do it at home. I mean, they were up 10 with a few minutes to go, so they were... That was a really good... A really good win for them. And they've just got the right mix out there. Now, sustainability, you know, ask me in a month. We'll see what happens. I do, look, they may not be a top five defensive team, but can they be, you know, middle of the pack and better? Yeah. They may not be a top 10 offensive team, but can they be in the upper half of the NBA? Yeah, maybe. You know, if things break right, they can stay healthy. Look, I thought going into this year that this team would struggle out of the gate and then play 500 basketball in the second half of the season, because everything Ime was trying to do would eventually click. Because they've got so many veterans there now, I think some of that stuff started to click a little bit earlier. So do I think they're going to compete for a play-in spot? It's tough in the Western Conference. It's really tough. But do I think they can be competitive, hovering around 500 for a while? Yeah, I do, especially if they can stay healthy.
Definitely. I agree that I think top 10 efficiency on both ends of the ball throughout the season is going to be a tall order. We have a super long way to go. I also think that they have guys on this team who are going to also improve throughout the course of a season, which should help them a lot. I do think they'll be in the play-in mix. And I give Udoka credit for this, because I think we both kind of thought the same things about this team. Maybe they'll get a few bumps along the way and kind of settle in. You can also say he's adjusted his approach to the roster he has. I think he knew in Boston, that was a team that had been to the conference finals a couple times already and maybe needed more of that push, needed more of that kick in the ass. This team, I think it's still that blunt approach, but I think adjusting his expectations, adjusting what he's asking for them, it's really worked so far. That I mean, they took a huge punch from Jokic last night. It's not like, Jokic had an off game. You know, they caught the Nuggets sleeping, whatever. I get Murray was out, but Denver's been a deep team all year. They took an MVP punch from Jokic and still won that game. Really impressive.
Yeah, they're very impressive. But look, I thought Mark Daigneault was the favorite for Coach of the Year coming into the season, but if Ime has this team at 500 after the year they had last year, he's the Coach of the Year. Mm-hmm. Just is. That's not a team that had any expectations coming into the season. That, now they're three games above 500, winners of six straight. I mean, and plus, you know, going now they're off till like Friday. And they get the Clippers on the Clippers Laker back to back. So imagine if the Clippers lose that game. We'll get to the Clippers in a couple of minutes. I do want to talk, though, about the Philadelphia 76ers, who are the best team right now in the Eastern Conference. Another team, top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency. Joel Embiid's numbers right now are right at an MVP level. Tyrese Maxey. His numbers are outstanding. 28 points.
50-piece last night.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that. 28 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds on the season. He's shooting 50% from the floor, 43% from three-point range. They are the NBA's highest scoring duo after Maxey dropped that 50 spot on the Pacers last night. Listen to Joel Embiid talking about Tyrese Maxey's process.
I mean, if I gotta be honest, he probably would have taken this leap a year ago, 2 years ago, because I've been telling him to, you know, walk out with Drew for a long time. But I'm happy that he did it. But you know, that's not about me. That's not about the trainer. You know, that's someone that wants to. He just wants to get better. He wants to learn. He's willing to learn. He listens. Extremely humble, hardest. I've always said the hardest working, person I've ever been around. And that's saying something. And he doesn't, take plays off. He always finds a way to get better. And obviously he's doing great. But I think he has an even brighter future. I think he can get to another level. And Philadelphia's got a good one. He's going to be here for a long time, and like I said, he's a franchise.
So, look, I've even from going back to the start of the season, I was an unabashed fan of Philadelphia, more so than others, I think, because I did believe there was another gear to Maxey. Not this gear, necessarily, but I did believe there was another gear to Maxey that would kick in if James Harden was gone. Tobias Harris, I told you, I've been talking about Tobias Harris.
Contract year Tobias.
And look, my friend Bobby Marks and I were going back and forth on Twitter a couple of days ago about why Tobias Harris is taken off. And I'm sure some of it has to do with James Harden not being there.
Yes.
You know, he gets more opportunity with Harden gone. He's in a contract year, man. And contract year guys are undefeated. They always seem to play well.
That goldfish money isn't going to last forever either.
When that money's on the line. You know, Robert Covington has played a role. Dick Batum has played a role. It's made them even more versatile. I think Marcus Morris is going to be a guy that plays a role with that team too. That's a guy that loves the playoffs. Mm. So I think you watch out for him as the season goes on. In your mind, is Philadelphia right now on that Boston-Milwaukee level in the Eastern Conference?
I mean, the real question is Milwaukee on Philly's level? I think Philly's been fantastic. Pina and I talked about it a little bit late last week, and they've just continued to thrive since. There's so many good things happening here. First of all, Embiid, currently averaging a career high in assists without the spike in turnovers. That is huge. We talked about this so many times over the summer where I said they should trade James Harden for role players because if Maxey can take the leap, they can approach something like the Nuggets model. Now, their third best player isn't as good as Aaron Gordon is, and the Nuggets have a fantastic starting five. But the Nuggets don't have that traditional... I mean, even Murray, some people can quibble about whether or not he's a superstar. They're getting superstar-level production from two players right now. What Maxey's doing when Embiid isn't on the floor is also huge. They have a legit bench group. Paul Reed, I think, has been the answer they've been looking for at the backup five for years. That's been very big for them. And you just look at the guys on their team between Maxey, Harris, Batum, Covington, Melton, Embiid. They have a playoff rotation already. Like, they have a playoff-capable roster. I mean, we haven't talked about Kelly Oubre, by the way. Terrible news about him. Hopefully we're able to see him back this season. He's been having a great year. Pat Bev as well. But they just have, I think, really solid rotation. My fear is that Daryl Morey, because we talked about that trade, Daryl Morey's always been a star hunter his entire career. Will he go hunting for that third star? I think they have to be very careful because I think it's Boston and them. There was a huge matchup Wednesday night, prime time, looking forward to that game. They're, to me, the class of the East right now. It's not close. You could argue they're the class of the league with Denver in terms of net rating, all that. I don't think they should mess with this. This is a really good team that I think is – I really think it's the best fitting one they've had around Embiid his entire career.
Well, what this start does is it takes so much pressure off of Daryl Morey to make a deal right now. The pressure on Daryl Morey to do a deal is about feeling pressure to make Joel Embiid happy. Well, based on what I've seen, you know, from post-game interviews, practice interviews, Joel
tweets.
Embiid seems pretty happy. Mm-hmm. He seems pretty happy right now. He seems to love Tyrese Maxey. He has dubbed him the franchise. So you have the process and you've got the franchise. He seems to love this kid as his kind of de facto sidekick, as his number two option, just works for him. So Joel Embiid is happy and will be happy, I would assume, as long as they keep winning. And we know the Sixers, if they go into this offseason, they're going to have $50+ million in available cap space. So, you know, playing this way gives them the option of just playing the season out, going into the offseason, keeping all their assets, and they've still got a boatload of them, keeping all their assets, and then using that free agent money to go out and pursue an OG Anunoby or a Pascal Siakam, who could be available for nothing. You know, for absolutely nothing. Or in lieu of that, like, let's say you do want to get your hands on OG or Siakam before the trade deadline. Well, knowing that you don't need to do it, that there's no pressure there, you can lowball the crap out of these teams. You can go to Toronto and say, I'll give you one first round pick in exchange for these guys. If you really want Zach LaVine, I'd rather have Alex Caruso. But if you really want one of those guys, you say, I'll give you one first round pick. You don't have to throw multiple first round picks at these teams. You can, you know, basically be in an advantageous position if you're Daryl Morey. That's what this start has done for the 76ers, kept Joel Embiid happy and gives them the kind of flexibility. It didn't look like they were going to have a couple of weeks ago.
I could not agree more. And I don't think that, like, to me, I'm almost Anunoby or bust. I mean, I have to look through, like, who the actual trade candidates are for this team, but like I said, they got to be so careful with the third quote-unquote star guy, whoever they insert into this mix, because they have a really good mix right now. I don't think you want a guy who's going to take the ball out of Maxey's hands. Just something about Tyrese Maxey that I thought was really interesting. Mannix, you get these anonymous scouting reports for us for the mag every year. The anonymous scout was really high on Maxey. They were like, we think he can take the leap. We had Jimmy Butler react to the anonymous scouts this year, and one of the ones I asked him about was Maxey. And he was like effusive in his praise. And Jimmy Butler, one thing I learned about spending time around the summer, not an effusive type of person. And he was like, no, he's legit. I think he can be an all-star. And beyond that, he was like, he's a great guy. Like, people around the league love Tyrese Maxey. And that is such a huge element here. Who, outside of Jimmy Butler, when was the last time we've seen Embiid mesh with someone like this on a personality level? Didn't happen with Ben Simmons. It didn't happen really with James Harden outside of maybe the first couple weeks. This seems like just such a perfect fit in every possible way. You know, they beat Boston in that game in Philly. I believe the next one's in Boston. It's going to be a really good game. I'm looking forward to that one because I think we're finally starting to see the Sixers like realize a style of basketball that I've been wanting to play for years, which is it needs to be so much more Embiid-centric, you know, feeding off the doubles, etc., instead of having a guy like Harden pound the ball. They were killing the Pacers last night with pick and rolls. Yeah, I don't think Milwaukee's shown anything close to what Philly has so far.
Well, yeah, Milwaukee, I think, needs more time.
Sure.
You've got to give Lillard more time to incorporate himself. You've got to get Chris Middleton more time to get back to hopefully being Chris Middleton. So I'm going to reserve judgment on Milwaukee. But as far as the Sixers go, I see no reason to believe that what they're doing isn't sustainable because they should be a high-level defensive team with Joel Embiid in the middle. Tyrese Maxey, good defensive player, blocks some shots. Like, you know, they should be good on that end of the floor. Offensively, no, Maxey's not going to average 30. But if he averages 24, 25, which is realistic, they should be this good offensively. Tobias Harris, maybe he's playing a little outside himself right now, but he's not going to come down that much. Like, he still is a really good player and a really good scorer and a good third option, you know, for this team. Some of the other guys they've got out there, you know, Covington and Marcus Morris and Nick Batum, these are proven NBA players. So, you know, maybe, you know, they're not going to win 80%+ of their games, most likely not. There'll be a dip at some point, and God knows, you keep your fingers crossed for Philly, Joel Embiid can stay healthy and stay out there on the floor. But when with the question of sustainability, I don't see why this isn't sustainable. I don't see anything that is like, wow, like, where is that coming from? In fact, like, I look at Boston even, like, there might be more variance in Boston. Like, you know, is Kristaps Porzingis going to be this all-NBA level big that we've seen in the first, you know, month of the season? Maybe, maybe not. But with Philadelphia, you've got some proven commodities there. I mean, Tyrese Maxey, everyone thought he was going to take a leap. All the coaches I talked to, he spent the offseason working with Drew Hanlon, who I thought did a great job at enhancing his game and pushing it to that next level. Embiid, just about to turn 30, still in the prime of his career. Like, there's no there's nothing you see with Philadelphia that makes you say, that's not going to last all season long, or that's not going to last. The only thing that concerns you is health, and specifically Embiid's health, and if he can stay on the floor. So I'm a believer. You know, it used to be a big two in the Eastern Conference. I think it's a big three right now.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And it's the best I've felt about this team in the last few years. It's just, it cannot be funnier the way the Sixers and Clippers have gone since that trade. I know we're about to get to the Clippers in a second, but truly, truly hilarious stuff.
All right, let's talk about the Clippers, and time to bring down the room a little bit, because what an absolute disaster. I saw the Clippers play live in New York. I was in Dallas a couple of days ago. I watched them on TV on Sunday. There's nothing, outside of a couple of spurts, there's nothing I've liked about the Clippers. I want to show you some, give you some numbers here with the James Harden plus minus, which are really remarkable numbers. All right, against the Knicks, first game for James Harden. He was a minus, the Clippers were a minus 18 in the 31 minutes that Harden played, plus 4 in the 17 minutes without him. All right, whatever, first game, almost got to throw that out. Second game, Brooklyn Nets, minus 15 in the 36 minutes with Harden on the floor, plus 8 in the 12 minutes with him off. All right, a little more concerning. Dallas, minus 6 in the 29 minutes with Harden on the floor, minus 12 in the 19 minutes with him off. And now here comes the big one here. Against the Memphis Grizzlies, the home opener for James Harden, minus 28 in the 29 minutes Harden was on the floor, plus 24 in the 19 minutes with him off. Ty Lue, in the end of that game, was doing some remarkable substituting. Like, when that team was making a run in the fourth quarter, Russell Westbrook was on the floor. For some reason, Ty went back to James Harden and played him over the final 3 minutes, kind of going offense-defense with Russell Westbrook and James Harden. Take a listen to what Ty had to say about how James Harden is fitting in and what he needs from him moving forward.
Still early on, but we need to have more dialogue, you know, just understanding exactly, you know, what we need from him. And so just, you know, him being aggressive, you know, not looking at the bench, trying to, like, just play. Like, just do your thing. Like, if you're doing too much, we'll let you know. And he's a special player, and so we understand that. And when you come into a new situation that you have really good players, you know, it's always tough to come in and just try to take over. And so with PG and Kawhi and Russ, you know, we've had these conversations, you know, and so we just got to make sure we get James as comfortable as possible, because he's going to be huge for our team and what we're trying to do. And so we got to just get him comfortable as fast as possible.
Is it too far to say he's being, like, almost too polite?
Yes, he is.
I mean, do you want to expand on that? Just sort of
he's being too polite. What do you want me to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's being too polite.
So, Rowan, what those numbers boil down to is that the Clippers have not won any of the James Harden minutes, have been a minus for all the James Harden minutes, and have been a plus in three of the four games that James Harden has played in. What have you made of the first game, four games of the Harden era?
Chris, this is a joke. This is embarrassing. This is unacceptable. When I did the trade grades for the Harden deal, the caveat was if the players insist, like Kawhi, PG, Russ, seemingly everyone was in on this move, then whatever, the price you paid is fine. But my assumption was that these guys wanted to play together so badly that there would be some baseline level of chemistry, some kind of understanding of how it's going to work. There's been none of that. When Russ, Kawhi, PG, and Harden have played together 65 minutes, the Clippers have a minus 15.4 net rating. For context, the Spurs, the worst team in the league by far, have a minus 11.6 net rating. I don't care about the sample size. There's no sample size small enough where those four players should be playing at a pace worse, by far worse, than the worst team in the league. It's embarrassing. Then you have poor Paul George. Paul George was having a fantastic season before Harden shows up. Next thing you know, he goes, I have to be the glue guy because we don't have anyone to do the dirty work anymore. Now everyone's blaming Paul George for playing like the glue guy when he's actually trying to take a step to make it work. Russell Westbrook was, I think, having a great tenure with the Clippers until this happened. Now his role's changed again, and they're clearly scared to move him to the bench. This is what happened with the Lakers last year.
Oh, yeah.
They're scared to move him to the bench, but him and Harden just don't make sense on the court together at the same time anymore. This has been a disaster. I think all the players involved should be embarrassed because they pushed for it. They had a good team. Kawhi is finally healthy. Kawhi Leonard's played in every game, and we can't even enjoy that because of how bad they've been. To me, it's a joke. I wrote about this for SI today. They need to get a grip, whether it's a players-only meeting, something. Those four got to figure it out because this was their big idea.
I'll throw some more numbers at you here. The last four games which James Harden has played in, they have an offensive rating of 106.9. That's good for 28th in the NBA. They have a defensive rating of 118.6. That's 25th over the last four games in the NBA. They have a net rating of minus 11.6. That's 27th and more than a point below Charlotte. That's where you are. You're more than a point below the Charlotte Hornets in net rating over the last four games. There is very little reason to be optimistic that this is all going to work out right now. They have had some absolutely awful quarters. They have had some good stretches where they've played well. The first quarter, I believe, against the Mavericks. You had the fourth quarter against the Grizzlies, where they seemed to get it together, at least for the first 9-10 minutes of that quarter. But they have had some absolutely awful game-changing quarters. The opener against the Knicks, brutal in the fourth quarter. Just got blown off the floor to the point where, you know, Ty Lue waved the white flag middle of the fourth quarter. Against the Grizzlies, we're not against the Grizzlies, the Mavericks, second quarter, just brutal second quarter.
Oh, that demolition.
Led to Ty Lue pulled the starters, end of the third quarter, waved the white flag, end of the third quarter of that game. Look, Ty said it's going to take 10 games to figure out what this team is. I'm willing to give him that and say, look, you need some practice time. They've got to play Denver on Tuesday. I imagine that's not going to go well for them.
And Denver has owned them the last few years.
Yeah, they're going to have a few games off after that. But man, I don't know how they, make this work. I mean, what kind of dramatic move they have to do to make it work. I was reading some stuff from the LA columnists out there. We're talking about moving James Harden to the bench, like having him be the sixth man. And now Ty Lue is out there saying, we need James to be James. How is that going to work? Like, how is letting James Harden be the player that he's been in recent years going to work? That is only going to take the ball away from guys like Kawhi and PG and Russ. Somehow, I got to believe, Rohan, this ends with the Clippers just losing Westbrook. Like, losing whatever they figured out with Russell Westbrook at the end of last season and the beginning of this one. I don't think they're going to have that. Because Russell Westbrook, look, he's still a very flawed player. But he was on the floor when they were making that comeback against against the Grizzlies the other night. You got to yank him in and out, offense, defense. That's how it's going to work. By the way, Russell Westbrook, not a great defensive player either. So, like, that's not exactly, you know, putting meta world peace into the game. So I just think this ends up with them losing Russell Westbrook entirely, just not being able to have a functional relationship with Russell Westbrook out there on the floor. I don't know. I don't know how this all kind of comes together. This was my biggest concern. I wrote this immediately after the trade. I wrote a column that said James Harden is going to make or break the Clippers. And the argument for breaking him was that all of a sudden you had four high usage rate players out there on the floor. James Harden and Russell Westbrook historically have been high usage rate players, historically high usage rate players. I know it's been a few years in Westbrook's case, but Paul George and Kawhi Leonard last year were in the top 40 in usage rate. So you got a bunch of guys that are used to having the ball in their hands, and asking them to come together in a matter of months without a training camp to find a way to win, that's asking a lot. That's asking a lot, especially when you got all four of those guys who are effectively in a contract year, or at least I think Russell got a two-year deal. But you've got Harden, PG, and Kawhi all in contract years. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of what the Clippers are going to do to make this work. I think it's going to take something dramatic. And my guess, and just a guess at this point, but my guess is it begins with Westbrook going to the bench. I think they'll put Westbrook on the bench. They'll put Terrence Mann in the starting lineup. That gives him a little more versatility in that starting lineup, and a guy that doesn't need the ball in his hands.
Yes.
You put Terrence Mann in that starting lineup, but then you have to ask, what happens to Westbrook? Can you play him and Harden together at all? There's just a lot for Ty Lue to figure out.
For sure. I have one more number for you, which is that the Memphis Grizzlies doubled their win total by beating the Clippers on Sunday, by the way. Literally doubled it. Like, you know, I'm willing to even give him a pass for the first three games. Memphis has been one of the worst teams in the league this year and is a mash unit. That was such an embarrassing loss at home. And, you know, Westbrook, I think, maybe even unfairly, but Westbrook was the scapegoat for the Lakers last year. It's like every problem traced back to the Westbrook trade. They had to get rid of him. They go on this run once he leaves, whatever. But he found success with the Clippers. And he did change his role with that team. And in the playoffs, especially when Kawhi and PG were out, he was doing his best to keep them afloat in that Sun series. And I thought was playing some of the most rewarding basketball of his career. And I think we're seeing the inverse of the situation now, where maybe you could say, yes, Russ was an issue with the Lakers. If they move him to the bench, this is the Clippers' fault if they lose him. It's not Russ's fault. Because I think he's sacrificed a lot for this team already. Yes, maybe he wasn't going to get a big contract this summer, and he came in as a free agent. But that's still asking a guy, a former MVP, to take that much less money. Like, these are not easy things to do. It's easy for guys like me and you to sit here and say, take this contract, you're this kind of player now. That's not how it works on a human level. And I think Westbrook has done so much to make himself a part of this team, to then, now you're going to have to ruin the success he's had because of James Harden, who has done nothing except be out of shape. Like, how many games into the season is it fair for me to expect James Harden to be in shape? I mean, I get that he wasn't playing, but it's not like the season hadn't started yet. It's just so embarrassing. It's such a joke. And if they lose Russ, it's 100% the Clippers' fault. And, you know, they got to get a grip, man. Those four, they got to get in a room. They got to figure a way to hammer this all out.
I just don't quite understand how part of the solution is to let James be James. Now, Harden's numbers are bad so far. He's averaging 13.5 points and just 4 assists. This is coming off a year where he averaged 10.5 assists, led the NBA. But I don't really understand how having Harden play a lot of high pick and roll is the answer to all this. I mean, the Clippers, look, their offense, and I've tweeted this a bunch of times in the last few days, their offense has no variance to it. It's one pass shot, no pass shot. When there are more than one passes. Oftentimes in those situations, it's because a guy gets trapped and has to pass it. They're relying on the one-on-one skills of their players to create offense. And in the NBA, that's not going to work. Like against teams with good defense or even average defenses, it's not going to work. You can't just one-on-one your way to success. And that's what the Clippers are basically trying to do. And I just don't know how you adjust on the fly. Look, the isolation part, that was a problem last year too. This isn't a new thing for the Clippers. Ty Lue came into training camp talking about, we're going to cut more. We're going to have more ball movement, more passing, all that stuff that comes with a more diverse offense. Now you're adding a guy that has been the focal point of most of the offenses of his career. That is a ball dominant guy. And I think it's a part of him that's itching to be that ball dominant guy again. There were a few possessions in that Memphis game where he's just dribbling. Like he's just dribbling 15, 16 seconds, 17 seconds, waiting for the screen, maybe making a pass with 5 seconds left on the shot clock. Like, I don't know how that's the solution. I don't know how that makes them a team that can compete for a championship. You know, again, got to give him a little more time. Ty Lue wants 10 games. Give him 10 games. But that Denver game on Tuesday is most likely a loss. Then they've got to come home on Friday and play Houston, which has been white hot and is going to be rested going into that game. They could very easily be 0-6 going into the weekend. Very easily. And then what are we talking about with the Clippers?
And on top of all that, I just want to say it's been hilarious. Objectively, the funniest possible outcome is the Sixers going on this run and the Clippers losing 6 or 7 in a row. I hope they get it together just for the intrigue of it. I want to see Kawhi and PG especially healthy in the playoffs. For that reason alone, I hope they put it together. But man, oh man, it's been a joke. It's been a complete and total embarrassment.
All right, well, I would like to say we're not going to be talking about James Harden and the Clippers next time, but there's a pretty good chance we will be. So we'll talk to you then.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.